good to see everybody here today. I hope you've all had a good week. I know it's been a difficult week for many of you. I suppose we probably have at least a dozen or so of Mary Mays's relatives, and they've had a difficult week, and yet also one that had great blessing with it also. But we want you to know that we've certainly had y'all in our prayers, as well as her neighbors. One of her lost her best friend, and one of her best friends. So we realize that many of y'all within our congregation, within the community, were just dear friends of Mary's as well, and we're thinking of you also. Appreciate each one of y'all still being here today and focusing upon that which is the most important. We have visitors with us. We're delighted to have our visitors today. Good to see Christy and Rudy with us and the boys with us today. It's always a treat whenever they come up. And so good to see y'all and each one of y'all that are here today worshiping with us. The passages that I want to look at today are going to involve something that maybe you wouldn't normally relate them to, but we're going to be starting in Mark chapter 11 and in verse 22, and we're going to be talking about moving mountains. And let me give you a little background on this. I was traveling over Raton Pass yesterday, and I got to thinking, I've been over this a lot lately, and it dawned on me that I've been over Raton Pass 20 times now in 4 months, 10 round trips. And then, because I have a sickness towards math, I started figuring up in my head that was once every 6 days over Raton Pass. Beautiful pass, but quite frankly, I wouldn't mind not seeing it for a while after this. I've had to make a trip, and I've been able to. I've had the privilege of doing that several times, to go and be with family, but also for our teen trip. And so there's a lot of it that has been enjoyable about it. But because of health concerns and some other concerns, there have just been some things that I've observed, at least that other people are going through. And then I start thinking about all the things that y'all are going through. I think about Omega tomorrow with a 4 or 5 hour surgery before her, and we certainly want to be keeping her in our prayers, and I know you have been. She's a precious sister, and we want to remember her. And then some of the others that we mentioned that have been through surgeries that are undergoing testing right now. The fact is that at any given moment, most people are going through something in their life that is really big. Sometimes they're pleasant, like Colton and Brittany, about to have a baby in 6 weeks, and we're keeping Brittany and that baby in our prayers. Sometimes not as pleasant, when we have partings, when we have sickness, when we have maybe financial concerns, or whatever it is that you go through. We all have different stresses within our life. And if we're not careful, we will focus upon them more than we focus upon what we're here for. Now, part of what we're here for is to endure these stresses and circumstances, because they're part of the test. Not because God is cruel, but because God does want to see if we're going to be serious, if we want to serve Him for all eternity or not. But He does not leave us without tremendous support. In Mark chapter 11, verse 22, Jesus said this: "Have faith in God." The question or his comment came up because he had been on his way into the town, and as he was going there with his disciples, there was a fig tree he came upon, and he cursed the fig tree, said, "May you never bear fruit again." I've often wondered about that, because Jesus really never did anything that was negative in his life. He never did anything just to be destructive or just to lash out. And yet he came across this fig tree that was out of season for bearing fruit, mind you, and it didn't have fruit. And he cursed it, and he said, "May you never bear fruit again." Now, don't forget, through Jesus, all things were created, so he had the right to be doing this. But why did he do it? Well, as they were coming back into town the next day, or coming back out of town, I'm not sure which one, but anyway, they passed it, and the disciples noticed that the fig tree had wilted. It had just withered down to the root. It was dead. And so they asked Jesus about it, and it was Jesus' reply that gives us the answer for why he did this. He said in verse 23, "I tell you the truth, if anyone says to this mountain, 'Go throw yourself into the sea,' and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will happen, it'll be done for him. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours." Now, some people immediately want to take this for the wrong purposes. When you're little, okay, I'll ask for a bike. I'd like a bike. When we get older, we want big bikes, maybe $1 million to kind of cover the expenses, too. We think that somehow that maybe we have found something that God will do for us to make him our personal servant. And that is not what Jesus is talking about right here. Jesus is talking about the fact that if we need something from God in order to serve him better, it is at our disposal. And while I doubt very seriously if it would ever be handy for any of us to ever be able to curse a fig tree again and for it to die, it was handy at that point because it allowed Jesus to introduce a lesson to us that was important. I cannot conceive how it would be important in God's kingdom for us to pray for a mountain to be thrown into a sea, but I can assure you if it ever is, that's going to happen. But I think what Jesus is really trying to point out to us is you have mountains in your life. You have things, you have obstacles that are in your way that are keeping you from God. And they're very often not sinful things. Sometimes they are sinful things. Sometimes it's something that we've done. Maybe we've started taking some kind of a substance and have abused that. And so we're suffering the consequences of that. Maybe we've been involved with immoral behavior and we're starting to suffer consequences from that. Maybe we have certain illnesses that have been a result of at least ill-advised behavior, if not sinful behavior, and we suffer the consequences for that. But sometimes, very often, the things that we are trying to struggle against are just brought to us. They're part of the test of life, or they're a consequence for somebody else's evil. Somebody gets drunk, gets in a car, and plows into your family, killing some, paralyzing some. Well, that couldn't have possibly been God's will that somebody sin and that happen. Now, as far as what God wills and what God permits, I don't know, but I do know that he says, don't sin, and when people sin, it does have consequences. So sometimes we deal with things that are the consequences of somebody else's sin. But sometimes it's just a happenstance. Sometimes it's just bad judgment on our part. I'll go ahead and get that third new car in 4 years. Whatever it is. And then we have to adjust. We have to try and figure out how we're going to deal with these things. Sometimes somebody gets very sick in our lives, and we have to take care of that. Sometimes we get sick, and we have to take care of that. But whatever it is, there are going to be mountains of fear and mountains of worry in your life that only God can handle. And if you and I ever forget that we serve a creator who is powerful enough to lift a mountain up and throw it into the sea, then we might forget that we serve a creator that is powerful enough to take these problems that we have and handle them, or at least allow us to have the wisdom to handle them ourselves if that is what he desires for us. It's an important principle, so start thinking about some of these mountains of fear and worry that perhaps you're dealing with now or maybe you've dealt with in the past, and see if this isn't so, and see if all we need to do is ask for God in prayer for help, and he will take care of us. Again, he's not going to put us on some kind of a spiritual welfare to where we never have a test that we have to go through. But boy, it's important for us to remember he can help us through any test. And he expects us to meet the tests. There was a lady a number of years ago lived during the Great Depression. And this is a true story that was related by Dale Carnegie. He wrote a book called How to Stop Worrying and Live. That sometimes maybe you've wondered how you can stop worrying and live. It was a good book. He had some great scriptural principles in there. He also had some nonsense in there. I'm not recommending everything, but I am saying that this came from that, and it really kind of maybe will help us think about what we go through. It helped me think about some things. But this woman who he called Mary because he didn't want to expose her or her kids to embarrassment, her and her husband were struggling during the Great Depression. They had five kids. And her husband, I think in his job, he made $18 a week to take care of them when he worked, because he had had a series of small accidents. He also had some illnesses that were fairly serious. One of them turned into scarlet fever. Another time he had the mumps. Several times he had bouts of influenza. And if you've ever looked at the influenza that they used to have without any treatment, it could be fairly serious. And so they were continually just kind of beaten down. They owed, I think it was $50 to the local grocer. And one day her 7-year-old son went in, and that grocer accused him of stealing a pencil. A small thing, but it was the straw that broke the camel's back for Mary. Her son was just distraught over it. And of course, you moms especially will understand this. She was just heartbroken for her son. And as I say, it wasn't stealing a pencil. It was just, that's what broke her back. And so, one day when everybody else was gone except for her 5-year-old daughter, she decided, I've just had enough. She went into her room. She took her daughter with her. She closed the door. She started putting newspaper and rags around the cracks in the door and in the cracks in the window. And her little 5-year-old girl said, Mommy, what are you doing? And she said, we're going to take a nap. And the little girl said, well, that's funny. We just got up. She said, never mind. We're going to take a nap. And then she reached over and she turned the gas on to the heater without lighting it. And they lay down on the bed. What Mary had forgotten was that she had the radio on in the kitchen, and she started hearing the strains of a song that was on the radio. And the song that she heard was this: what a friend we have in Jesus, all our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear, all because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. When Jesus said, I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received and it will be yours, is a true principle. The woman leaped up from her bed. She grabbed her daughter. She opened the door. She got all the windows open. She turned the gas off. And she spent the rest of the day in prayer. It wasn't a prayer of gimme, gimme, gimme. And she had a lot of needs in her life, but it was a prayer of thanksgiving. Thank you for this. Thank you for bringing me to this point. Thank you for allowing me to have this. And it was a prayer of repentance as well. A prayer to ask for forgiveness for losing sight of all that she really had. This story was related a number of years after this event had happened. And she said, my kids grew up and they're beautiful kids. I have 3 grandkids. Now, my 5 kids are strong and healthy. I have more joy in my life than you can believe. But she had to get to that point where she realized that God really can move mountains if you will just ask Him to do that. And if you are in a covenant relationship with God, you have the right to ask God for anything in prayer. And you have the right to expect Him through faith to answer it in the very best possible way. In Matthew chapter 17 and verse 19, the disciples in a different situation. They had come back from seeing Jesus transfigured with Elijah and Moses. Peter, Andrew, and John had been with them. And while they were gone, the other disciples were doing the ministry of that they were sent to do. And they had come across a man whose son had a disease that would cause him, or an illness or a demon possession, excuse me, that would cause him to fling himself into the fire. And the disciples were trying to drive this demon out, and they couldn't do it. And so Jesus came and He took care of it. Well, the disciples later on came to Jesus because they wanted to know, why was it that you were able to do this and we weren't, even though they had been given the authority from God and the power to do that? And in verse 19 of Matthew 17, Jesus answered in this way. Well, let me just read the question as well. The disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, why couldn't we drive it out? He replied, because you have so little faith. Yeah, can you ever say that? Man, this is hard. Why is all this happening? I'm exhausted. I am wore out. I'm tired. I don't know if I can bear any more. Why is this happening to me? In this instance, Jesus said, because you have so little faith. And then he reminded them of a truth. I tell you the truth. If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. And again, you may be thinking to yourself, well, what possible good would it be to move a mountain? This is not Jesus's point. Jesus's point is that the Creator has the ability to do that if you needed it for his service. If he can move a mountain for you in his service, what can he do for you that you need? Or what can he not do for you that you need? What types of things are you going through that are even close to what they were going through then? That would be something equivalent to moving a mountain. And so again, I believe that when we look at this, one of the things that really is helpful to us, if we apply it correctly, is that God can move mountains of fear and worry from your life. You don't have to live with that if you don't want to. But you have to have a little faith. Faith as small as a mustard seed would do it. But you have to have faith. In Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 10, I'm not sure that this verse wasn't written with me in mind sometimes. I know it was written with all of us in mind. But it says this, if you falter in times of trouble, how small is your strength? Think about that for a moment. How many people give them an out for what they've done? Well, I know I shouldn't have done that, but you should know what they did to me. Or I know I shouldn't have done that, but it's no worse than what they did to me. Or I know I shouldn't have done that, but you just cannot imagine the pressure I was under. The times that we often falter is during times of trouble. Now, I realize there are people who can't even make it through the good times well. I have to raise my hand on that more than once. But the point is this. You have God who is on your side when you are with him. And because he is on your side, when you are with him, he's going to help you get through these times. It took me a lot of years to realize it, but I finally realized a few years back that when we are at our strongest is when we have done everything that we possibly can, and then we have to turn the rest over to God. Now, I realize that a lot of times we think we've done everything we can and we're really just fooling ourselves. But I mean, if you've genuinely done everything you can, if something is out of your hands, you have greater strength at that moment than any other because now you can go to God and you can ask him to take care of everything else. Hopefully you've been asking him to help all along, mind you. But now you can expect God to move these mountains in your lives that you just didn't know how you were going to handle. But if we falter during times of trouble, our strength is small. Anybody can do good in good times. It's the tests that prove a man. And I'm not quite positive that the proof doesn't need to be more for us than for God. God knows our heart already. God knows how we'll handle things already. I don't know what he chooses to see in the future. I think sometimes we're very presumptuous on that. But I do know that this is for us. It allows us, it exposes areas in our life that we need to work on. If you falter in times of trouble, how small is your strength, is not something that is meant to rub it in for us. It's meant to cause us to stop and to think where we are in our relationship with God and with Christ. In Job chapter 3 and verse 25, I can remember looking at Job and just thinking, man, why did Job ask question God over here? Why did he ask about this over here? And then I realized that the whole premise of this book is that God chose the one out of the history of the world to make as a comparison to Satan. Have you considered my servant Job? And then permitted Satan to test him. So this was a righteous man. This was a man with far more strength than you and I. We couldn't stand in the same room with him when it came to righteous behavior or devotion to God. And yet there were things that happened in his life that caused him, he thought, to have the right to question God. At the end of Job, you find out very quickly, and Job finds out very quickly, he didn't have that right, and Job admitted that. But look at this in Job 3:25. What I feared has come upon me. What I dreaded has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest, but only turmoil. He had lost his family. His children were all dead. He had lost his wealth. He had lost his standing in the community. His wife, who must have been a very righteous woman herself, also cracked at this time, and she said, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" So he lost the support of his wife. He had three righteous friends, or at least they were seemingly righteous. They came to fast and to mourn with him, but then they turned on him. So now his friends are turning on him. He's lost everything, and then he says, "What I feared has come upon me." You ever have secret fears, you know, the things that wake you up in the middle of the night and say, "Oh, I hope this doesn't happen." Maybe you've done something and you're hoping you don't get caught. Maybe there's something out there that could happen and you're just hoping against hope that it won't happen. Well, Job even had this, righteous as Job was. And so if you have these things, this is common to man. If the most righteous man that God could choose as an example to Satan had problems with this, then you and I will have problems with this as well. The question is not then, okay, I'll give myself a pass and I'll say, "Poor, poor, pitiful me," and whatever else you need to do with that. The point at this juncture is then to turn to God so that he can move these mountains of fear and worry for you. It does not mean he's going to solve the problem for you. He might. But it does mean he's going to be able to give you what you need to survive the test, to become stronger, so that you can be a more effective servant for the rest of your life. I think sometimes we get so tunnel vision that we think we're here to do something physical. We have physical requirements that we must do, but we're not here to do something physical. We're here to serve God. We're here to make sure that our families have whatever they need to be able to serve God. We are here to be able to share our faith with people that we come across. And sometimes we forget that. And so when we forget that, we ought to have fear and worry. But when you have fear and worry, that's the time to remember, I've got help with this. And if I can get God's help with this, then I can get back to doing what I was created here for. Remember Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10? We are God's workmanship created in Christ Jesus to do good works. That's why you became a Christian. That's why you're here. And again, sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we think that we are here for a house or a farm or a car or a ranch or sports or whatever it is. These things enhance the joy of life if we use them correctly. But these are not the things we're here for. We are here to serve God. And if at the end you hear on that final day, "Well done, good and faithful servant," God has moved mountains for you. We need to be looking forward to that. We need to be appreciative right now. Can I read one more passage and we'll close? It's found in Romans 8:31. What shall we say then? If God is for us, who can be against us? Greatest words of encouragement that I think you can find. Do you have fear and worry? They feel like a mountain to you? Then turn to God, the only one who can actually move a literal mountain. So these little mountains that seem so big to us are well within his power to take care of, if you'll just turn to him. If you're not a Christian today, then you need to be a Christian so you can take advantage of this. If you're old enough to understand the gospel's call, then it's time to answer it. It's time to make sure that you have acknowledged before men that your belief that Jesus is Lord, that he is the Son of God. It's time to have your sins washed away, because you still have them until they are washed away in baptism. If you are a Christian and you have faltered, again, you can always take care of that privately. But if you'd like the prayers of the congregation, we'd love to do that for you. We'd be honored to do that. But if you have any needs, won't you come forward and let us know while we stand and sing.